Hey, this is Josh Arnold. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast with Chris and Shane. Both handsome. Neither one of them would succumb to my advances, however. But keep listening anyway. Thanks. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all. Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 28. My name is Chris Bumeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
This week, we are sitting in kind of, what is this, like the
Backstreet Blues and
Backstreet
Jazz.
Boys Blues. Yeah, it's pretty. Backstreet Boys. This is where the Backstreet Boys practice. Probably the nicest place we recorded. We are with comedian Josh Arnold, who's going to go on tonight, but nice enough to hang out with us before then. JoshArnoldComedy.com. How's it going, Josh?
Thanks. Good, for good. How are you guys?
Doing
good.
Doing
it's tragic good. To hear that this might be the nicest place you've recorded.
I'm just trying to think, and I'm just, yeah, it's pretty, I think it wins so far. But I have a short memory, too. I just remember recording outside in the cold last week, so I'm good.
Recorded at Chesterfield Mall Food Court one time and with Bobby J. Cox. And
there's a fair amount of ambient noise, I would imagine.
Screeching chairs being pulled across the floor was the best part.
Yeah.
It was silent for a while, and then all of a sudden it's just like, this is beautiful. Right. My ears are bleeding after that.
So you guys are, you sort of just gypsy it around.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the show, that we can, and it allows us to get better guests, that we are able to kind of go wherever and set up and record. And but yeah, sometimes it's always like, where are we going to record this at? And then we end up like at a Redco or something like that.
Yeah.
Stuff like
it's a little easier to do that than like, hey, do you want to come out to my house and record in my basement?
Yeah.
And
that's right,
just,
right.
That's a little creepy. Yeah. It's just nicer this way.
Right.
Plus we can, like I said, work around. So yeah, so let's talk about the STL Film Fest coming up here. It's on November 17th, right?
Yeah. The film festival runs, I think, the 14th until like the 22nd or something.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But I have a movie that's showing on the 17th, Monday night at 9 p.m., it's a kind of a superhero comedy.
Watching the trailer on the way here is kind of cool. Like is it like a, not a spoof of it, because it's just kind of like a different, you know, it's like you guys say basically you're not superheroes. You're like the, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, not rejects, but just
I mean, we're just impersonators.
Just impersonators.
So it's just, you know, a group of ragtag sort of birthday party impersonators. Somebody you might hire just to be Superman at your kid's birthday party, and then they unwittingly get put into a situation where they actually have to be somewhat heroic. So it's along the lines of like a Kick-Ass or Super, except those guys wanted to be heroes, whereas we have no interest in it at all.
Yeah. So. It's probably a little less gritty than a Kick-Ass, you know, not as much blood, maybe.
Yeah, no, there's some blood, but not nearly as much. I don't think we ever dropped the C word like Hit Girl did.
Yeah.
But
you can still do that in like post-editing, and maybe you just throw one in there.
Right, yeah, some ADR work.
Just some out of nowhere. what did he just say? Don't worry about it.
But so, we do, but it is, yeah, if it were to be rated, it would be rated R.
Oh, gotcha. There's
awesome. A fair amount of language.
Now, did you have a hand in writing it?
Yep. I co-wrote it, and it's kind of a silly, fun, just sort of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I just try to cram in as many jokes as possible, really.
Right. Well, it is now, like, when you sit down to write something like that, what's the process? Because, like, it's always really baffled me when they're like, you know, I wrote this movie. Is it just ideas, or how do you kind of go about turning it into a movie? Because that's really always interested me to go from
in
idea
this,
to...
Yeah, in this case, know. It was the director had read an article about kind of like, you know, some superhero wannabes, and then had sort of wanted to make a movie in that realm, and then sent me some pages that he had written, and then I just sort of took those characters and those pages and then did some rewrites and then finished it up.
Okay.
And so I actually had a fair amount of like parameters. This was an interesting thing, because normally I would write a script and the characters, and then I would just, you know, write characters, and then we would cast based on who those characters are.
Yeah.
In this case, the director already had a lot of his friends and stuff in mind, and so he built characters around them, and then, so I already had like all the characters I needed to work with. So then it just became writing for that person's style.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I know, like, Frankie Chubb is in there as well. We had him on the show. Shane interviewed him quite a while ago. But he's a very, very funny guy, too.
Like, yes, absolutely. And he steals quite a few scenes in this thing. And he, like, in as positive a way as possible. And he, his character was fairly, I mean, it was just kind of an ancillary character. Then when he got on set, he really brought it to life with us through some improv and ad libs and things.
Yeah. Did he ask you if he could be called Fishman?
He didn't. No, I just wondered
because he's a huge fish fan. I just figured he'd try and incorporate that somehow. Can I be Fishman, please? Please.
Yeah, we talked for a good 45 minutes with him about fish because he's apparently obsessed with
them. Oh, yeah. Travels all over. He was just in Vegas seeing him.
It's crazy.
Well, yeah, but he was great in the movie. He provides a lot of laughs.
Now, are you a superhero fan? Like, are you a big fan of
Marvel? Not really. No? I like all the Marvel movies, and I like I've always liked superhero movies. Comic book wise, I've never really been into it. I read Watchmen and loved it.
Yeah.
And like, I guess some of the big ones I'm familiar with, but when it came to comic books, I was more into like reissues of Tales from the Crypt and like horror related stuff as opposed to superhero. So that was also kind of like. Because when this thing first came up, I was like, this is pretty well-worn territory with Kick-Ass and Super and all these, we all know that story of the non-superheroes trying to be superheroes.
Right.
But I liked the angle that these guys were just thrown into it and had no interest in actually trying to save the day. And then I also thought, man, I don't know much about these superheroes and I don't know... it's nothing I've been terribly interested in, so it might be a fun kind of challenge to get into, sort of dive into that.
Right.
And it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. Like, it's just knowing your comedy and then that you had a hand in writing it, and it just makes me interested to see it and see how it all came together.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited for people to see it. I've seen it about 1,000 times in different like incarnations because it's been. I've had a big hand in the editing and everything, so some of it still makes me laugh out loud. I'm happy to say. Some jokes I'm like, oh, that didn't work quite as well, but I think it'll still be fine. But it could also just be because I've seen it.
Seen it 50, especially in like the editing where like you're probably you're splicing or whatever, and it's just you may see the same line 15 times in a row, and you're like, oh, okay.
I forget that it's a joke, and then somebody else will be like, oh, they'll laugh, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's meant to be funny. Okay, good.
Yeah.
But it has low humor and high humor, and it's. It's pretty irreverent, and it was fun to sort of mess around with different. There are actually there's at least one line that used to be in my act, so you'll recognize that one when you see it.
Yeah. Did you go to school or anything for like filmmaker or anything?
I did. Yeah, I graduated from Webster University with an English major, a bachelor's in English and a bachelor's in script writing.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh yeah, I just wondered because editing's. I mean, you could do it, but not something you just jump in and be like, okay, cool, editing. But
yeah, no, I worked with a professional editor who, she is in L.A., she edits for Ancient Aliens on History Channel. And she and I sat over, altogether would have been a couple weeks worth. Maybe 12, 15 days in an editing suite, and I just sort of helped her. Because the footage was fairly disorganized when she got it.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of able to say, hey, this is meant to go there, and this should be here, and get sort of the comedic timing down on certain things. And I learned a ton. Like, I knew nothing about it, except for, like, my own... I'm a huge movie buff, so I had, I could just sense what worked and what wasn't. And But in terms of the technical stuff, I had no idea. And I just learned so much about... How editing affects comedy and emotion and how things that I had an idea of, but I just didn't. I mean, this I actually got to see that happen, and then especially with the sound editing, that's incredible.
That's one thing. Whenever I see people do it, like, because I'm just not that technical. Like, I went to school for broadcasting, but when it got to like editing sound and like and all, I was just like. And like any of that, or like any After Effects, where it's like putting in special effects and stuff like that, blew my mind. So like that, there's people who are just incredible at it, and I'm just like, I can put scenes together and structure it, but like when it comes to really technical stuff, it just blows my mind how people have the patience, because it's not just something you're like, okay, I'll put in this effect. It's like you have to build it.
And yeah, you're right. It's yeah.
Incredible.
And sometimes you're just listening to birds or whatever. Like it's nothing exciting at all, but you have to get it right.
Yeah.
And because there were, you know, there are a couple fight scenes in this movie, and so it's like, oh, that guy didn't hit him at all. Yeah. You can tell it's so fake. And then as soon as the punch sound came in, we were like, he hit him right in the face.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable.
I don't even remember. Yeah. Now, do you like
how it just fools the eye, the sound does.
Do you enjoy the editing, like actually going and editing, or do you like being kind of the actor in the film? Was there a side you preferred more when you're doing it? Because I know I like really the editing part's a lot of fun when it comes together, because you get to actually see the movie come together compared to like, acting out. And it may be a little out of sync when you're acting it, because you don't shoot it necessarily from start to finish. You may do different parts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if you had a preference of being in the movie was more fun? Or
no, and this may sound like a generic answer, but whatever I was doing at the time is what I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, writing it, I was having a ball, and then even though it's hard work and it gets frustrating,
yeah,
I was still having fun, and then same with the acting, and then the editing. I would say the editing was the biggest surprise to me. I thought it would be tedious, and while some of it is, I loved it. And I'd actually, like, you know, it's got me into thinking about, like, taking editing courses and learning programs and stuff just so that when I do future projects, I can have more of a hands-on in it, because I really loved it. Now when I watch TV and movies, it's like my main focus, whereas it used to be the dialogue and the acting, and now I'm like, oh, I see. So they cut that in that way so that we could see there. Like, I mean, it all sounds very basic, but it's just
fascinating. It gives you an appreciation. It isn't necessarily just where it's like, okay, I'm going to put this scene here and then cut it here, put this scene here. You really do have to make it flow, and especially if there's any type of like music, cueing it with music, soundtrack, or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's incredible how much detail goes into it.
And yep.
I'm very kind of beginner, too, where I'm like, I know how to put something together, but if you had a pro come in and all the different aspects, even just like color alterations, because like, oh, I'll make it a little darker or light. It just blows my mind, because I'm like, this is incredible. Like,
yeah, the coloring is hugely important. And that I didn't really have a hand in. It was we had a different, like we had a professional colorist do that. And but they have to keep in mind, oh, well, this is sort of a lighter, happier scene, so the colors should be lighter. And this one's more ominous, so we should make it darker and stuff like that. So it's always, you always want it to match the tone.
Yeah, I wish I had that patience to go in, because like when I'm doing something, I'm just like, okay, does it fit? Cool. Is it good? All right. Yeah, there's nothing going crazy. Awesome. Like, I'm not like, well, I could bring that color in a little bit different, just because I'm like, I've been working on this 2 hours.
The little bit that I saw of it, and you know, I was kind of able to talk to him. It seemed like it was all kind of instinctual. And then it's sort of old hat. And then it seemed like he just kind of threw on his headphones and listened to music and just did it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just all like, not habit, but like he just, it's after you do it for so long.
Yeah.
It's not as tedious, and you have a routine and probably develop like a way to do things, shortcuts or whatever that, when I do it, it'd take me 7 days and I'd still look crappy, you know, like it'd be horrible. I don't know. But it's very cool. Like, I'm just really interested in the filmmaking kind of side of things. And it just seemed
it was
really,
cool.
Probably a lot of fun.
And with the editing, too, it was like, I felt badly because I would have to, her name was Randy, or is Randy. She didn't change it.
She used to be, and then after the movie, she changed it to Ron, and I was like, what's going on here?
I probably annoyed her with my apologies, because, like, I'm sorry, I just need to, because I would ask her to cut it one way and then another way so I could compare and see it both, like, especially with jokes, because, you know, it's humor is so fragile. I mean, if you don't get a cut right, or if you don't have enough timing in between some lines of dialogue and stuff like that, it can just kill it. Yeah. So,
well, especially if you're writing it, you know, this is a project you have your hands on. You want to be as perfect as you can make it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, just try to squeeze as many laughs out of it as we can. And
did you record locally or
we shot in the Indianapolis area?
Yeah,
and then most of the post production happened here in St. Louis, and but yeah, no, we spent two and a half weeks in the Indianapolis area. Yeah. And
was that just did you guys actually scope out and go out there? Or is it just being out there?
The director
there
was out there, and most of the cast was out there.
Oh, gotcha. That
and so yeah, so then we those of us there were it was I guess from St. Louis. It was Frankie, Andrew Topping, another local comic, and myself. We went out and. Andrew was he has a couple small roles in it, sort of Nutty Professor style, where he plays two different characters, and then he was also a production assistant on it too.
Okay,
so.
Gotcha. Do you have any other things you're working on now in terms of writing any new?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a couple new scripts I'm working on. And the main producer of The Impersonators and I really hit it off. And we he actually did some of the first editing. And then he and I did together. He lives in Orlando and I went down there. And we sort of got some rough cut put together before we took it, before I brought it back here and met up with Randy. But yeah, he and I have become good friends, and so we plan on doing more movies.
That's cool. Awesome.
So just the idea being, with each movie, we get a larger budget, and then just and keep building from there. So
then you're Michael Bay, and you get like $250 million, and you're just required to put in 75 explosions, and you're set.
It's weird, man. It's weird. Like, I think about those guys, and I'm like, man, I was watching a thing on Interstellar, which is coming out this weekend. And
oh yeah,
Christopher Nolan, and they were showing the sets and all this. I was like, God. I wonder if it's still fun, or wonder if it's more fun, or if it's less fun to work with on that kind of
that
scale. It's so insane.
I couldn't even imagine. Like, I was watching at work one night. It was slow, so I started watching the making of the first Star Wars, the Episode One, not the first one, but Episode One. And like the pre-production and like something of that scale, that you're like, how do you even manage or like start to even begin to direct something? Like, it just blows my mind how much stuff goes into not only just making a film in general, but making a Star Wars or just this huge, big-budget films are just incredible. And I couldn't do it because I would be like, you act, and that would be
right,
it.
Right.
Okay, well, yeah, what about these 70 other people that are standing around that just all the credits, when I watch the credits, I'm like, how are there this many people involved, and how are you controlling all these people?
Like, it's almost like that scene in Casino where when De Niro is explaining what everybody in the casino does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that, but he's like, the pit bosses watch the so-and-so, and then the so-and-so watch the pit bosses. You just have to have a good team who you trust.
Yeah.
And so you trust your assistant director to take care of certain things that you can't be bothered with until you have to be.
Right. Delegation.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about delegation. And
yeah,
that's one of the things I really learned a lot about, too, was just how you, I mean, you always, you know, a movie is collaborative, but when you're on set, you're like, oh, yeah, we need all hands on deck here. This is really collaborative. And if anybody's not open to listening to opinions or, you know, sometimes criticism or other ideas, then it just shuts things down so hard.
Now, were you guys on a time crunch in terms of you had to get it done in that set of time? Or
yeah, we were. Pretty much in terms of, for a couple reasons. One was budgetary. We didn't have enough money for hotels to go that long.
Yeah.
The other thing was most of the cast are unprofessional actors, meaning it's not their main source of income. It's not their main job. And so they had to get back to work.
So. I'm going to need to get some money here because I'm running out. Is there something you can do here? Jeez. So let's talk about your stand-up act a little bit. Now, you're going on tonight, but how long have you been doing stand-up? I don't want to necessarily, when was your first time you did an act? You know, how long have you been doing comedy?
Well, professionally, 5 years, somewhere around there. I guess maybe six, starting out as, you know, hosting, and then... But it's been my main job for the last three.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have, because I know there's so many different aspects, you know, when people think of like stand-up comedy, a lot of people just think they go out and just stand-up. But like, is there a side that you'd like to get into, like writing jokes, like do writing for shows or anything? Or is there an ultimate kind of like what you would ultimately dream to do on the comedy side of things?
Do
you just really enjoy stand-up?
I do enjoy stand-up. I think I'm, you know, having this limited experience with film, I think I'm better at the film stuff and writing script writing and stuff than I am at stand up, and it just feels more natural to me. When I watch, you know, when I watch really good comedians, in my mind I'm like, oh man, they've got this nailed. Comedy doesn't need me. But sometimes when I'm watching movies, I'm like, oh, there's room for me in there. Like, I can get in there and make some things and stuff like that. And so I think that's telling me something. You know? But I don't want to do a disservice to stand-up. Like, I still really appreciate it, and I love it, and I always want to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing nice, too, is that, you know, people who have built careers writing or whatever for shows and whatnot, they still go out and do stand-up and still are able to do that. So, yeah, it's definitely not something that's like, okay, well, now I want to go do this, so I'm going to stop doing stand-up. You can always actually go out and, you know,
For sure, because it is a different. It's nice, a, I mean, it's a way different beast. You get you get immediate response to things, and you. I mean, the energy is just way different in front of a live audience than on a set or something like that. And, I have done some writing for, like for TV in terms of like some other comedians have been on TV shows and I've done writing for them.
Yeah,
for those shows, and that was fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
I was just curious with doing kind of the movie side of things, if it was something that you could still incorporate your writing jokes or whatever, but doing it kind of behind the scenes more so than being a starring role or whatever it is, but
one of the challenges is if I come up with an idea, I'm like, should I write this as a stand up bit, or should I put this in a movie, or should this be a sketch? Right. Like, it's kind of like, oh, I should. And I do feel like I would be a better comedian if I didn't have these other interests. Like, if I was just interested in stand-up, I would know. I'd be like, oh, well, this, I need to put this in my act. How can I write this to where it'll be the funniest, the best addition to my act?
Yeah.
But since I am sort of torn between what I want to do, I think it does kind of water down my act a little bit. But
if you're enjoying it, though, I mean, that's the main thing, because it does help to have other outlets. And if for me, like, I get burned out on things pretty easily, and not just because I don't like them, but just, when you do things all the time. So I think having other outlets or other passions that you can either also incorporate into what you do, or just in general, if you wanted to go and do water skiing or something, just out of the blue, just something that's nice to have that other outlet that kind of express yourself. Or
so did you go to school for radio broadcasting?
It was, I like the TV side of it, but I hate it. I never want to do radio because I don't like the format of how radio is done, and music especially, but I really got into TV production and things like that, but I unfortunately didn't graduate, so I didn't have my degree, but when I started to get into it, I was like, I really like the editing side of it, and I've always wanted to do a podcast, and that's kind of what, when we got going, I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Because
I love doing it, and I love I love the internet and social media and things like that, and podcasting really kind of fits into that.
Sure.
But it's just something that when I went, originally I went in like 2004 and went for 2 years, and I started in broadcasting. Like, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up, that whole thing.
Right.
So I came home for a couple of years and then went back and was kind of more mature and then continued with broadcasting. But I don't know. I love editing and but I don't know enough about it to do like hardcore editing, but I love making things and creating different aspects, but I'm kind of like, I've always been like the jack of all trades, master of none. So like, I know a bunch of different things, these little things that I love to do, but I'm like, I don't know how to do this extremely well, but I don't know. But yeah, I've always enjoyed production of some form or the other.
That's cool. What is your end game, Shane? What are you, what would your dream job be? You seem to me, you see so much comedy and you listen to so much music, and then you go to live shows and you support all these things. Are you a movie guy? So I mean, I think you would be a good critic, except I've never heard you say anything bad about any.
You should have heard on the way over. He was like, that Josh Arnold guy, I tell you.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe you're just
he is horrible in soap opera. I'm sorry.
It is one I've heard that for me about me that the people would like to be me to be a critic, but they are afraid that the fact that I don't say anything negative. And I don't know. For me, it's like I don't feel like I'm. I guess if I get paid to do it, I would do it. But for me, it's hard to bash somebody else's art. Because I know they. I mean, regardless if I don't think it's funny or I don't think it's a good song or whatever it might be. Somebody else put a lot of energy into creating that, and then somebody else might really love it, It's like,
exactly.
I'd rather focus on, positive reinforcement or anything, and then just saying, oh, it's, crap,
I mean, I could completely respect that, and I do my best to be the exact same way. I don't if ever I'm talking about something on social media, I try to talk about things that I enjoyed, as opposed to what I think a lot of people do, which is just complain. And does that make me a better person? I think it does. But
am I pretty much awesome? Yeah. Fuck you. Okay, but that's all. I agree.
But it's so easy just to cut down what everybody's doing. And it's not interesting.
Right. I think too, when you start to overanalyze something too much, you start to I think if you went out and just started reviewing things, I think you'd lose some of that enjoyment out of like going and seeing something because you're trying to, you know, write them or review them, and I just think you don't get to experience it and enjoy it. And I think as much as you enjoy those things, I think you'd almost it would kind of start you start to not enjoy as much because
Then you'd be a better feature writer then somebody who would go out and just and
go check these.
What I would like, I mean, I don't know, I have a lot of ideas. Obviously, we'll see what the future holds, but I think it'd be fun to be like a talent scout or something, or because I'm always like I love going to see new music and comedy and just trying to kind of be the catch the next big thing or something like that. And then I but I also would love to get into like owning my own venue or something and start booking my own shows and doing that kind of stuff and being able to have a, you know, a hand in booking music and comedy and a
venue. Awesome. So almost producing.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, that's a, it takes a lot of money to own a venue and everything. Sure. Like, but I don't know. I just think that'd be a lot of fun to get into that side of it. And
what happens when you love a band that's been that's gone fairly unnoticed for a long time and then all of a sudden they blow up? Or are you like, oh, I was into that? Or are you like, great?
Well, everybody likes them. I mean, I wish them all the best, and I obviously I want other people to hear it, but it's like, but secretly, it's like I wish they would just stay in these small clubs because like, I love that intimacy of a small club. But it's like one of my favorites, and I mentioned on the show a couple times, is this guy, Will Hoag. He's a great singer-songwriter from Nashville, and he's got a funny bit in his that he does in between the songs, and he was talking about that he wrote a song for Eli Young Band that went number one, and he got to go tour with them and write some more songs. And like, so he would, his own shows, he plays it, you know, in small bars, like he plays it off Broadway in St. Louis. And, but then when he was on the road with them, he's playing like, you know, Verizon and stuff. So he's like, he's playing these big amphitheaters and it's like a totally different thing. And, he's talking about how like he's back there like playing guitar with them on the song. And he's like, you know, yeah, I wrote this motherfucker or something. Like, you know, wrote this song. And like, but it just, so I mean, I would much rather have my artist that I enjoy like stay small, but you know, you want them to also be successful and keep doing it and stuff. And
you could, I mean, if you come in and be like somebody who reviews people, and if you really like them, just throw out a bad review every once in a while.
Yeah, keep them down. Yeah,
keep them down. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hold their head underwater a little bit.
They put on the worst show I've ever seen, and I mean,
I love that. You know, I'm not a huge country music guy. I don't have any country stations programmed in my car radio or anything like that.
Right.
There are some I just love.
Yeah.
But I love that country music has still embraced the songwriter.
Yeah.
Like there are people who just write the songs and then they sell them to artists and recording studios and stuff. I love that.
Yeah.
I watch Nashville.
is that with Hayden Panettiere?
Yeah. I love it.
I've heard it's good.
It's like it's like the most soap opera-y thing. And it's just full of like melodrama, but I'm addicted to it, and that's one of the reasons because I just like seeing, like, oh, we're these young, excited songwriters, and this sort of Reuben McEntire character is singing our song, and it's pretty cool.
There's like there's a guy I like, and that's where I'm at. I'm more into the singer songwriters, and like there's another guy, Dallas Davidson, that I like, and I like his writing a lot, but it's like, but he sells like every one of his songs, and they're all like number one country songs.
Yeah,
and he's got a CD of his own, like him singing his own songs, and then like, I usually like his versions better than like, because once I get, you know, he sells them to Luke Bryan or whatever, they become like these pop kind of overproduced country.
Sure,
songs.
Sure.
And it's like I like what he kind of does them more stripped down, and it's and that's kind of where my taste is, but I also like the. You know, blues and rock and everything else too, but I like you said, I do love that they embrace the singer songwriters and stuff, and
it always interests me that like people, like when they see these artists that are like, these are amazing, they're phenomenal, but then like they don't write their songs, and that's what's always like, that's kind of always irked me a little bit. I'm like, you know, you need some, you know, you got to be able to have charisma and sing, obviously, but like when they're like, yeah, they're just amazing. I'm like, you don't write any of these songs. There's somebody who's like doing this for you. Like, I feel like people who write their own, and especially feel like it's more so like rock music. Like, people seem like play their own instruments, and I guess country too. But I just feel like there seems like those who can do that, I give a lot more credit to than.
Yeah, anytime you get a peek behind the curtain, it's always kind of a letdown. You're like, oh man,
yeah.
Yeah, but then I guess you just got to look at it like, well, I don't know. Maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, some, there are comedians who have writers now.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to assume it's because they've gotten so big that they kind of need the help. And they still have a pretty good say as to what they're doing on stage. They're not just buying jokes outright and then throwing them out there. They're like, okay, yeah, this one is right for me, and I can put my own spin on it and stuff like that. And
it's kind of like, I think it's got to the point now, especially like with country music and even in comedy, there are some of these guys that are working so much, you know, they're on the road so many dates a year and stuff, and it's hard to, you know, to sit and write when you're constantly, you know, whether you're going from, you know, different shows to, you know, radio, and then you're doing, if you got a movie gig or anything else, and so you're working so much to where you don't have the time to really write that, so you got to have some help writing so you can constantly produce new material so you can keep that wave going.
Exactly.
And you can keep...
Your act has turned into a brand at that point. Yeah, sure. So then you become, I need to help keep this brand going, and all of other people work on the act.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody can be like, you know, I don't know. I guess he writes all of it, but like Louis C.K. like puts out like a new hour every year, and it's like, and...
But he slowed up with the TV show. You know, like he's so, which is by no means am I saying that he's getting lazy, because he's not at all. Yeah. He's still super prolific. But even he's like, all right, he like at one point he told FX, he's like, no, you got to give me 2 years off. And they were like, of course, because you're a cash cow for us.
Right,
And then, you know, when as he does that, then I think his stand-up kind of slows. But it's still... He's still as hard a working person as that's out there.
Right. Yeah, he's he's kind of changed the game for stand-up comedy, like for the modern era. Like,
yeah, he really has.
It's kind of pushed a lot of comedians to work harder, because they're seeing that, you know, how much he's writing and how much he's producing, and the fact that, like, you know, if you're putting out a new album, whenever, it's like you're still not doing half of what Louis is doing.
And yeah, yeah.
So it's crazy. How much
isn't that insane? You put out, if you put out a comedy album every 2 years, you're doing half of what he's
doing. Yeah. Jeez. It's crazy. It shows you, too, that like everything's a brand now. Like, no matter what you do, if you're on Twitter, you're a brand. So, like, as you're like, and it just feels like everybody's a brand now, like, and you have to enforce it. And I have nothing wrong with that, but like, it's crazy to think what, like, society is going to be like as it progresses, where everybody's trying to sell themselves. And maybe it's always been like that, but like with Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, like, you're, every time you post something, you're personing yourself as a brand,
which is why I think guys like George Clooney are right when they when they tell, I forget who, I guess it may have been Julia Roberts, but I think she said to Clooney, she's like, I'm thinking about getting on Twitter, and he was like, why would you ever do that? You're just going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
And like, he stated, because once you're a brand, you don't need to do that anymore. All you're going to do is get yourself in trouble, because you're going to make one off-color joke, or you're going to say one like political thing that's going to alienate 50% of the population, and then you have to do some false apology. I can't wait until I never have to do social media.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hope I ever get to that point where I'm like,
although you enjoy it, though.
I do, but like, there's sides of it that I just like... I think a lot of what's really annoying me is people, their phones. And I'm just as guilty. I'm bad about just sitting, and I'm sitting looking at my phone every 2 seconds or whatever.
But what about in the middle of a movie? Do you look at your phone then?
No, you know, I don't think I do, but I don't go see many movies lately.
Like, I was at the movies today, and it was, I still just could not believe how many people were looking at their fucking, oh, sorry, I don't know.
No, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, during the movie, I was like, what? You can't just let yourself go for 2 hours?
Yeah, I think I've noticed, too, with, like, people who record at, like, concerts now. Because I used to do it, too. And they're like, you realize you're never going to watch those videos, and they sound horrible. But, like, just enjoy the moment of being there, you know?
Well, they're doing it for everybody. I was here. It's proof that you were...
Right.
It's the modern version of buying the shirt.
And then I think there's some people that hope something's going to happen. So then you put it on YouTube and get all the millions of hits and make money there, you know? And I guess it's just everybody's hoping to get some form of that.
The Shanes of the world who buy the T-shirts to actually support
the genuine
band. And then, they're rare now. Like, it's mostly like, I bought the shirt so I could prove that I...
Right.
So that you can see that
so
I went
post
and did
this on Facebook tomorrow and, you know, tag it. Because I'm now part of the band, essentially, because of the shirt, you know.
I'm trying to like it, man. I'm trying to like social media. For a while, I thought... for a while I was doing Vine a lot, and I was like, oh, this is something I can actually get into. It's fun. It's, you know, kind of a distraction.
Yeah.
And then that just sort of ruined itself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, jeez.
I love your Vines, by the way.
Oh, thanks. I wish I was still inspired to do them. I hope I get inspired to do them again, because they are kind of a fun. You know what kind of took the fun out for me is you can, like, edit now. Whereas
it was a little more, you had to be creative.
When it was more rudimentary, you really had to be creative, and it was, like, challenging.
Yeah.
Now that you can throw up effects and you can do slow-mo and I'm just like, I'm not going to bother with that. I can't really compete.
Right. There's those people who spend, like, that's their career is making Vine. And real power to them. If they can do
They're making money.
Excellent form. Because I'd love to do that. But I just, like, that's what, it kind of loses, anything that gets big loses its, you know, its freshness because of these adaptations or whatever come out.
Like,
I think Vine's a perfect example where it's like, now it kind of takes away from the 6-second clip of this awesome thing.
Yeah.
Now it's 6 seconds of a fully produced Transformers movie that I made and whatever.
That was way easier to make than what you had to make when it first came out.
Exactly.
Because you would watch them and be like, holy, they had to do that 25 times to get that right.
Yeah.
If not more. And now you're just like, they did that in.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just
computer.
Cut and stop. And, yeah. But if I can get a good idea to do that, I'm going to totally make a video on Vine that can make me tons of money. I'm just waiting for that thing.
I love that the one the song parody stuff you started doing when, like, I don't even know the name of the girls that do that song, but that you did I Love Chips or whatever.
Oh, I was doing these things called Fat Guy Song Edits. Yeah. And so I would just take the song and it was like how a fat guy would make.
Right.
Like, and that's another cool, like, that's, like, what you, if you can hit a niche or, like, a little, like, category of something that you can consistently do. Because, like, if I made Vine videos, it's like, okay, today I'm saying this, and then tomorrow it's my son jumping off a couch and, you know.
Yeah,
like, I never find, like, dude with big nose explains Shakespeare or something. Like, I just never find that one thing that's like, oh, this guy consistently makes these videos of this, and that's why I want to subscribe to him. It's always like, oh, you're just some guy. I don't know. But, all right, well, I know you got to go on here, so we'll, wrap up.
Oh, yeah, I haven't gotten the word quite yet, but
nothing.
I want to ask Shane a question real quick. You see, you will come and watch comedians multiple times.
Yeah.
You've probably seen me 30 times at least, I would say.
Okay.
How do you, what do you look for every time you see somebody that you've seen multiple times like that?
Because I say it a lot, because I like, especially guys like yourself, and Tommy John again, I've seen a bunch. Like, each crowd you kind of treat differently. Like, so, like, when I saw you Sunday and there was kind of the drunk guy
in
the back and, like, that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, granted, you can insert any random drunk guy in about any show. But it's, like, it's just funny to watch how you, the improv and how you will handle a situation as it comes up and that kind of stuff. Like, the actual moment of the live entertainment, you know, it's like stuff that you don't get on the CD or wherever, you know, on the DVD and things like that. So, but yeah, you only get that experience if you come down to the show.
And it's like,
so I enjoy that. Like I've heard the jokes and they still make me laugh, but it's the whole improv and how you handle a crowd and is entertaining to me.
That was an interesting one because the guy was, you know, basically he was just a drunk and he was heckling. But he wasn't, well, you know, I don't even know if I could say he was heckling. He was just commenting.
Yeah, right.
Because there was no hate behind it. He wasn't.
Yeah, he was kind of like just repeating lines
just
that you
loud
like.
Talker.
Yeah, and sort of building on on jokes. Yeah. He was kind of throwing out tags or whatever.
Yeah.
And as he got drunker, they got more progressively, you know, less interesting and more insane.
Yeah.
And after that show, I was thinking, you know, a year ago, I just would have gone off on that dude.
Yeah.
And that would have been the wrong thing to do. Like, and I only know that because I did it. I've done it. And afterwards, I was like, that was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
But this time, I just tried to, like, have... I'm really trying to just have fun with those kind of things and go, all right, if I just go with this, it's probably going to be a better experience for everybody than if I yell at him and call him names and stuff like that. Because he is just having a good time. He's not...
Right.
People forget that we are working hard up there because we might make it look easier than it is.
Yeah.
I just
don't get, like, it seems like here at the Funny Bone, you know, the smaller comedy club experience, that for whatever reason, that happens a lot more, and it's like almost, it's like people, like, think it's, you know, like, that's their, some people have, I feel like that's their job, is like to come into the crowd and like, okay, I have to say stuff at the, you know, comic and things. But it's like, you know, I went to, well, even I saw Chappelle the other day, and there was some drunk girl yelling stuff. And,
yeah.
But it's not like you go to a rock show and somebody's like, you know, yelling out something dumb and heckling the, you know, this doesn't happen. It seems like it happens all here a lot more than it in some other venues.
It does. It happens, and it happens in St. Louis a lot more.
Yeah.
St. Louis is a town that prides itself in, sort of, I guess, I don't know, for lack of a better term, special moments. We love it when things happen here that don't happen, you know, which is why, one of the reasons why we're such a great baseball town, is because we appreciate any sort of great play that we see. I guess it's the whole show me thing.
Right. Yeah.
even if it is the opposing team, we'll give them a standing ovation if they break a record here at Busch, or they'll, you know, things like that. And the Westport Funny Bone, whenever people walk out of a show, it's always, that was great when you told that person off, or, hey, man, I was the one who yelled out, and we had a moment, and and it's like, this. I just want to go, this doesn't happen. Other places just let us do our thing. But knowing that, you just have to kind of go with it and go, all right, let's create a special moment that other shows aren't going to see, and stuff like that. And it's not a negative thing. With St. Louis crowds, but it is a thing for sure.
Yeah, you should start hiring hecklers to come in, and you can make it part of your show. Yeah, like they just make it. I don't know if you can.
I mean,
make
that's that is the heckler mentality.
Yeah,
is I've had people go, "Hey, man, I can stay for the next one.
I can do this again."
What?
If you want to do
no, it. I'm hoping the next one will be way easier.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, Josh, appreciate you coming on with us. Again, the Impersonators is showing on November 17th, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, St. Louis at the Tivoli, November 17th, and you can go to cinemastlouis.org and get tickets there, or at the Tivoli. And or you can follow me on Facebook. I have a page you can like there. Twitter, at thatjosharnold.com. Or, no, just at thatjosharnold. So.
There you go. Yeah. And then, you can check out the Impersonators trailer. It's on YouTube. And go check him out on the stand up. If you're listening to this and you can go back in time, come out and check him out tonight. Yeah, it'd be awesome. So, Josh Arnold, man, thanks for coming on and hanging out.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, that's a wrap on episode 28. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.